FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's June 13th, 2017. Well, hey, look at the stock market. What is going on with tech? I thought stocks always went up, just like real estate, I guess. I guess you had it wrong once again. Well, hey, by the way, questions, comments, email kl@kerrylutz.com. And now for John Rubino, our regular Monday morning conversation. John, good morning.
Hey, Kerry. The NASDAQ is in the news today and on Friday, where it just tanked. You know, we had a couple of years there where it was starting to resemble the late 1990s, where the stock market in general was going up, but it was mostly because of a handful of companies. And the leadership was getting more and more narrow until it was just five or six gigantic tech stocks that were generating most of the gains in the broad market averages. And they call them the FANG stocks: Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. And the fact that leadership had gotten so narrow and that trade, because of that, had gotten so crowded meant that systemic risk was really rising. You know, when that happens, All you need is a couple of those stocks to tank, and then the whole market gets pulled down. And that happened on Friday, and it's happening again today with tech stocks getting really smacked. They've lost in the aggregate, the FANG stocks, a couple of $100 billion in market cap in just the last 2 days, which means Jeff Bezos and the other hyper billionaires that own big chunks of these companies have lost billions of dollars individually in the last couple of days. So the question becomes, is this just a blip in an ongoing bull market, or is it going to spook all the hedge funds and individual investors who had crowded into these trades and lead to something more extreme? We won't know that for a while, but this is the kind of extreme volatility, both up and down, that starts to happen at tops of markets when things get really choppy because people can't figure out what to do, because greed is a very powerful emotion, obviously, and people don't want to miss out on the easy money of something that's going up. But then valuations are always out there as this scary indicator where they're at record levels. You know, stocks have never been this expensive in the past, except for 2000, just before the biggest tech stock crash in history. And people see that, and that worries them. So they're ready to take money off the table. At the same time, other people are ready to put money in to try to grab some easy money on these momentum stocks. And so you see extreme volatility start to creep up. And we're seeing the same thing in Bitcoin, which is having an epic run where it goes up by several hundred points or several hundred dollars per Bitcoin and then plunges and then goes back up again. And in the context of a rising trend, but still, it's extreme volatility that starts to spook people. So we can't know and until after the fact whether this is the top of this market, because there's so much cash coming in from the world's central banks, which are monetizing debt at a record level. In other words, they're buying bonds off the open market in return for newly created cash, which has to go somewhere. And that's part of what's been propping up the stock market going forward. So we've got all these cross currents that are starting to lead to rising volatility. So it's going to be a very interesting stretch going forward here when we find out whether don't fight the Fed is still the dominant strategy in the market, or whether valuation finally starts to matter in these various asset classes and we see a revaluation downward to something more reasonable historically. You know, we'll see. Eventually, that's going to happen. You know, eventually there is an epic crash out there waiting to happen. You know, we'll see 40, 50, 60% shaved off of a lot of these overpriced assets. But we won't know until it actually happens whether we're just seeing some, typical volatility in a bull market or the end of an era. And so, we'll get to talk about this a lot of Mondays in the future, I think, Kerry, before it plays out completely.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's so predictable. Yeah. So when you see markets go exponential, people say parabolic, but that means it's just going to go down again. There has to be another side, and there's a reversion, as Danielle Park calls it, reversion to mean. Is how much above average can something really perform for an extended period of time without having to go back to the average, this reversion to mean. I think it's a very valid concept. And I think here you're going to see it in spades.
Yeah. Well, it has always happened in the past. You know, we've never had extremely high equity valuations that weren't followed by a period of underperformance. In other words, you know, you're generating 10 or 12% a year on your equity portfolio for, let's say, a decade. Well, the following decade, you get 1 or 2% on average returns. Mm-hmm. And that, even that is assuming that normality continues going forward. You know, even in normal times, we should expect a really, really big correction from here. But these aren't normal times. You know, this is the most leverage that the global financial system has ever taken on. And it's continuing. You know, the central banks, as I mentioned, are continuing to leverage their balance sheets by creating new currency and buying bonds. The derivatives markets are getting crazier and crazier. Consumer debt is starting to spike once again. You know, we've seen a bubble in the auto market, and now housing is really starting to take off. There was just an article this morning in today's Wall Street Journal about how mortgage brokers are starting to rehire the people who used to originate subprime mortgages because that's the new business that they want to get into in the housing market. So we're seeing pockets of extreme leverage out there that's just becoming more and more extreme, and it's really widespread. You know, there's lots of different entities around the world that are taking on record levels of debt, which means that, yeah, this time might be different, but it might be different in a really bad way because, you know, historically stocks get out of whack and then they come back down. And in the context of an economy that isn't systemically threatened by the amount of debt that its players have taken on, this time around, that's not the case. We've got so much debt out there, so much leverage that a garden variety, say 20 or 30% drop in stock prices, which is pretty typical for bear markets historically, that's a literal systemic threat to the system. In other words, we could see massive bank failures and we could see pension plans going bust and mm-hmm. we could see governments defaulting on their debt because they can't manage their pension obligations. You know, it could go on, and it could be kind of a waterfall collapse of the global financial system if we're not careful here, just based on the amount of debt that we've taken on. And it's not just the US, it's everywhere. China's debt bubble is pretty well documented by now. And even though the true numbers aren't available because China lies about how much leverage is in its system, most observers consider it to be record levels, you know, record levels for anybody, not just record levels for China. Nobody's been that leveraged ever. And Japan, again, really well-documented government debt at 250% of GDP or whatever. If their interest rates just go back up to US levels, in other words, to AAA levels, their government is bankrupt. You know, their interest costs exceed their tax revenues. And that's out there waiting to happen. And Europe is just this catastrophe of unfunded liabilities, which can never be paid off. And then the US, you know, we're a mess too. So all of that leverage taken together means that stock fluctuations become a systemic threat. So that, you know, the central banks of the world are watching what's happening in tech stocks right now and are thinking of ways to intervene to stop it if it gets out of hand. You know, if tech stocks drop another, let's say 3 or 4%, which is not a big deal for tech stocks, they're very volatile. It wouldn't be a surprise to see one or more central banks jump in with stepped up equity purchases. For instance, the Swiss National Bank owns the FANG stocks in a very big way. So the Swiss government just lost a lot of money in the last couple of days. You know, they got whacked along with hedge funds.
Do they care?
And pension funds.
Do they care?
I don't know. You know, we'll have to find out what they think about this, whether it's politically a problem for them to turn their central bank into a hedge fund and then lose a lot of money. It seems like that would be a political issue. But of course, it's not a bankruptcy risk for Switzerland. First of all, because their central bank can create unlimited amounts of currency. And second of all, because it's pretty much a rock solid system other than the central bank speculating this way.
Right.
So Switzerland isn't like Japan. You know, they're not in danger of seeing the whole system collapse around them, but they're losing a lot of money today, you know, and that can't be a happy feeling for them because they made so much in the past.
So these volatility, these markets really can lead to problems with your underwear. However, we've got this company, John Frigo. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they make amazing, amazing underwear. All the products in the Frigo Zone have patented design, customized to your body. The quality of the fabrics that they use in these, I just ordered some. It's really amazing. And look, you can save 25%. Just go over to iwearfrigo.com and use the promo code SURVIVAL. Easy enough. You'll save 25%. And look, it's an incredible company. The products, custom designed. You think underwear is pretty boring, and it is pretty boring, except when you get into these volatile markets, you want to know that your underwear has got staying power. And look, John, you know how these markets can make you sweat, right? There's nothing quite like a volatile market to really get the traders sweating. I think this Frigo is going to become the underwear of choice for the trading community. And like I said, just go over to iwearfrigo.com, type in the promo code SURVIVAL, and you'll save 25%. The investors in the company, Carmelo Anthony from Timberland, 50 Cent, all of these different people have invested in it, and promotes healthy skin made of replenishable raw material. Like I said, it absorbs up to 50% more moisture than cotton, and the mesh that it's constructed of is moisture wicking and breathable, perfect for travel and working out, and it's made with nanotech. I mean, this is pretty cool stuff. So it's also available in Neiman Marcus and Bloomingdale's, so make sure you check it out and use that code SURVIVAL. And look how much money they lost as a result of the peg to the euro. They don't really care about money to come to that conclusion, right? I mean, do they?
Well, they don't seem to right now, but eventually they have to. I mean, the value of your currency is central to a capitalist system, especially a banking center like Switzerland or a fractional reserve banking system like any other big country out there. You know, right. The currency's value depends on the confidence the marketplace has in the government's ability to manage that currency wisely. And when you start screwing up by having the central bank create a lot of new currency and buy tech stocks and then have tech stocks tank, that's a problem. Or with Japan, if you try stimulus package after stimulus package after stimulus package paid for with borrowed money, and that doesn't work. So you're just left with all that debt that you took on and nothing really to show for it in terms of increased productive capacity. That's a problem, too. You know, these guys are all screwing up in their own way.
Oh, yeah.
But they are all screwing up. And Europe, again, you know, the European Union is just this horrible mess when you look at the under the surface numbers. You know, you got some decent macro numbers coming out of the Eurozone and the European Union. But if you look at this, at the disparities between Italy, for instance, and Germany, you see that it's basically Germany doing vendor financing to the rest of the European Union. In other words, their banks are lending money to Italy and Spain and Portugal. So Italy and Spain and Portugal can buy German stuff.
Right.
And when the latter default, when the peripheral countries in Europe default on those debts, which they can never hope to pay off, then Germany is stuck with that debt. You know, it goes on and on. You can look at any major country and spend a half hour just laying out the incredible mistakes that they're making. So the net effect of all of this stuff is that they've felt the need to create huge amounts of new currency in order to keep their past mistakes from coming back and biting them. And that currency is flowing into assets, which is in turn producing bubbles everywhere. You know, the cryptocurrency bubble is really interesting, especially because those currencies are alternatives to the dollar and the euro and the yen. When you buy Bitcoin, what you're basically doing is shorting the dollar or whatever home currency that you use to buy the Bitcoin. And in effect, it's leading the global marketplace to put a bigger and bigger bet on the collapse of the world's fiat currencies. So to the extent that the cryptocurrency market continues to grow, that's a sign that people have lost faith in these old national currencies for two reasons, really. One is because they're just you know, the current banking system is so technologically primitive that something like Bitcoin just looks like a brand new car versus a 1950s car when you look at how it works. You know, it's almost instantaneous, at least theoretically, it's almost instantaneous when you transfer money using Bitcoin. With the current banking system, you know, you put in an order to transfer money, and it goes from the bank that you put the order with to another bank, to some kind of a clearing center, to another bank. And it, you know, might take several days to do an international currency transfer. With Bitcoin, it's instantaneous.
Yeah.
Again, at least in theory, when the system isn't congested, it's instantaneous. And so because of that, you're seeing new cryptocurrencies begin to be introduced and gain acceptance, so that now Bitcoin isn't even 50% of the cryptocurrency market. There are others that are gaining on it, and new ones coming to market all the time. And what that means is that we may be creating another kind of quasi NASDAQ tech stock bubble in cryptocurrencies, where anybody with a reasonable degree of technical understanding of how this works can bring a new cryptocurrency to market. They call them ICOs, initial coin offerings. And
I know that's
in the same way
run there around the SEC, right?
Well, that's another issue with cryptocurrencies, is how do governments respond to the growth of these things when that growth becomes to be perceived as a threat to the fiat currencies of the world? You know, are the Fed and the Japanese Central Bank and the European Central Bank, are they going to let their currencies just be pushed off the field by cryptocurrencies, or are they going to strike back at some point? And so far, they've tried various kinds of regulations and, you know, defining cryptocurrencies as commodities and forcing people to pay taxes on every transaction. And it's not really working. Cryptocurrencies are still booming. So it isn't clear what central banks can do, but I think it's pretty clear that they will try some more stuff going forward, because they're not going to let Bitcoin replace the dollar. That's just not going to be allowed to happen if governments have anything to say about it. So we'll see what they have to say about it going forward. For instance, what would happen if they just made cryptocurrencies illegal in the US? Mm-hmm. You know, they just said you can't transact in these things because they're not money, which is, you know, kind of sort of what the case is for gold and silver coins now. You know, try to treat them as money and create, you know, a guy just a few years ago was put in prison for creating a form of silver-based money. And
yes,
and if cryptocurrencies are attacked in that same way, I'm not sure what happens. We'll find out what happens. You know, it could be that the internet just bypasses those regulations and ignores them, or it could be that we create a huge new class of criminals that the government can then selectively prosecute. You know, in other words, they'll let you do Bitcoin if you want to, as long as you're not speaking out against the current administration. But the minute you get politically active and you become a political threat to the guys in charge, they use the NSA to figure out how much you've been doing with Bitcoin, and then they arrest you for it and prosecute. You know, stuff like that could happen in theory. And some things like that will probably happen as cryptocurrencies become an actual threat to the fiat currency fractional reserve banking system. Because remember, if you're bypassing fiat currencies, you're also bypassing the banking system. And that's a threat to JP Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs and Citigroup. And since they more or less run the government, you would expect them to use the regulatory arm of the government, which they more or less control, to strike back in some way against cryptocurrencies. So that's a tricky market now, because you've got potentially a bubble, you know, so many new cryptocurrencies coming to market that the aggregate supply of them might overwhelm demand, at least temporarily, and cause a crash in their price. At the same time that their acceptance is spreading worldwide at a really an exponential rate, which at some point becomes a threat to the powers that be. And the powers that be still do have some weapons left, you know, and so it's going to be a very interesting process. I wouldn't even pretend to predict how it all plays out. I think eventually the blockchain becomes an important transaction mechanism, because it just works so much better. It's a better technology than the current banking system. But which currencies are transacted, you know, used for transactions over tomorrow's blockchain, I don't know, you know, and whether it's still Bitcoin or whether it's something new that comes along that's better, or whether it's national currencies that just co-opt blockchain technology and then squeeze everybody else out. We'll find out. It's going to be really interesting. You know, it's one of those technological revolutions that is very hard to predict going forward, but is clearly a revolution. You know, it's definitely a big thing that's going to change the world, and we'll have to see in what ways and on what time frame.
Yeah, well, I would just like to know who invented the thing, who really did, because that would tell us a lot about what's going to happen here and how it's going to happen. But mm-hmm. because we don't know it, it becomes another conspiracy theory. But one thing I do know is any market that goes exponential eventually busts. I mean, it just does. There is no way around that, right?
Yeah. Well, and Bitcoin's already done that once. It went up to, $1,200 an ounce and then back down to $200 mm-hmm. before it started its current epic run. So, yeah, there's no reason in this kind of a market to think that Bitcoin couldn't go from the current almost 3,000 back down to mm-hmm. 1,000, you know, but easily. That wouldn't mean anything to its eventual success. It's just, no. That's how brand new markets work.
They're very volatile, more volatile mm-hmm. than traditional markets, and traditional markets can be extremely volatile. And look, like we said, it was at 1,200 and went back down to 187 when our good friend Don Harold said buy. And there's no reason to think it won't go down 80% in the next month or so. It might not. It might double, triple. Eventually, it's going to take that 80% hit. And it'll probably bring it down to just below its peak last time. And it'll trade sideways there for a while. And everyone will say, well, you see, that's the end of Bitcoin. And then it'll come back. And because it's digital and because there's so many gamblers really placing bets on it now, that could happen so quickly, John, and the turnaround could happen extremely fast as well. So you have to take your profits when you can, when you get them in those cryptocurrencies, and keep some skin in the game for a free trade. But don't expect to get out at the top, because the top will quickly become a bottom before you even knew it.
Yeah, this is really uncharted territory. You know, we have previous growth markets as historical examples, and they were incredibly volatile, as you said. But we can't know how the cryptocurrency market evolves with any kind of certainty, because it's completely unprecedented. We've never seen private sector money threaten legal tender, you know, fiat mm-hmm. currency, the way cryptocurrencies appear to be threatening fiat currencies. So this is uncharted territory, but a really fascinating from you know, almost every perspective. Libertarian philosophy loves cryptocurrencies because it's private sector money. It's evolving outside the domination of government. So philosophically, this is interesting. And technologically, obviously, it's a much faster way to transact using the internet instead of clunky old, bank clearing systems. And so from that point of view, it's really fascinating too.
Absolutely.
And because it's a growth market that's soaring in price, it's a really interesting investment idea. You know, is it going to go to 100,000 like a lot of people are talking about? Or not. So it's possible that we'll look back on today's price as incredibly cheap, or vice versa. You know, it could be that this is the peak for a long time in Bitcoin's price because of a lot of other things that are happening out there. And you can't really know.
You can't know. Hey, John, we got to wrap up now. So, hey, it's going to be interesting to see where this whole thing ends up, because you just don't know when the volatile market is going to find its own level. But when it does, look out below, right?
Well, yeah. Talking about short-term movements in equity prices is interesting, Kerry, but you know, the overall backdrop of this is that we're heading for a gigantic financial crisis, and eventually
nothing's going to stop it.
Well, yeah, so all of this stuff will be reversed out.
Hey, and I just have to say, on that note, we will depart for this week. Check out John's work over at dollarcollapse.com, and John, we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Kerry. Talk to you then.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.